Welcome to the Rockstar Achievers Podcast with your host, Catherine M. White, founder and CEO of Accelerated Results 365. If you're an overachiever who's ready to hear what today's bleeding-edge, successful professionals are doing to create success in their business, you've come to the right place. On the show, Catherine interviews rockstar achievers who share their incredible tips, such as how they plow through roadblocks, outsmart the competition, grow a flourishing business, and reach unparalleled levels of performance. So kick back and get ready for a power-packed, insightful discussion with today's Rockstar Achiever.
Thank you for joining us today on Rockstar Achievers. We have yet another exciting guest with us today who has built an incredible, or has an incredible history in all that he's accomplished, and has taken that and he's continued to accomplish it or accomplish more, yet in a different direction. And I love how he ties these two different career paths together into this nice transitional piece. We have with us today Bill Staton, who has won 29 Emmy Awards for his work as a television producer, writer, and performer. Not bad for a guy who was born in the shadow of an Amish dairy farm in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. Today, as an in-demand keynote speaker, he infuses events with energy and laughs while helping his audiences become better, more creative leaders who actually thrive under pressure. And I have had the opportunity to hear Bill speak, and he is definitely entertaining and very informative, educationally wise. And I am sure, like myself, we all probably are dying to hear, how do you thrive under pressure? So, Bill, welcome to the show today.
Catherine, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
You're welcome. I would love to start out today by first going back to hearing or learning about your career as a television producer. What was that all about?
It was really cool. It's the first job I had out of college in my hometown, as you said, of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Amish country. So I was a TV producer there, started doing fairly well, and all of a sudden the station in Portland, Oregon started seeing some of my stuff, and they hired me away from the East Coast. And then there was a station in Seattle, Washington, where I live. It was the NBC affiliate, King TV, and they decided that they wanted to start, of all things, a comedy show, and a comedy / talk show at the time. And they looked around the country twice, I've been told. They did two nationwide searches to try and find the right person to produce this show and didn't come up with anybody. And finally, somebody else who was on the staff there said, you know, there's this guy in Portland you might want to take a look at. So they flew me up, and it turns out I had the right combination of producing skills. It wasn't necessarily that I was the best at any one of them, but I had the right combination, and I spoke the language of comedy. I've been a student of comedy all my life. So we started the show. And I think when we started that show back in 1984, we all thought that, okay, maybe this will last, you know, maybe we can milk this thing to like 3 years, or maybe five if we really, you know, do it well and don't screw anything up. So that's what I was thinking. I was thinking, okay, this will be what I do for the next, you know, 3 to 5 years, and then I'll move on. That's just how it works. And the show clicked, not at first, but we were able to stay on the air. And eventually we figured it out and we became a hit. And the show lasted 15 years. In fact, when it finally ended, we were still number one in our time slot, still making money. And by that point, 15 years, okay, Seattle was home, and it still is. So it was a wonderful experience. Producing a weekly comedy show I didn't realize at the time how much I was learning about leadership and about creativity. Because I was the executive producer, I was in charge, but I was also a writer and performer. And part of our job every week for 15 years was to be creative on demand, whether we felt like it or not. You know, no matter how, you know, we might have been fighting as a team, we had to be creative. We had to come up with jokes. I wrote Emmy award-winning jokes through divorce, through the death of a pet, through all kinds of strife and turmoil. You know, you just don't feel like it at all, but it's the job. The job is to be creative on demand. The job is to produce under pressure, literally produce. I had to produce the show under pressure, all kinds of pressure. There's the pressure of the clock, which means that, you know, as Lorne Michaels once said, we went on the air at 11:30, not because we were ready, but just because it was 11:30. You know, that clock is ticking, and you have to perform. You've got to be up there doing your best. And all the leaders listening to this podcast know that feeling of knowing that the deadline's coming and people are watching you. The eyes are on you to see how are you gonna perform. Are you gonna thrive? Are you gonna choke? So that's what I did. And you know, we got pretty good at it. And along the way, I got to learn to work with some really cool people, people like Jerry Seinfeld and Ellen DeGeneres, Bill Nye the Science Guy. We actually invented Bill Nye the Science Guy on my show. He was my lowest paid writer at the time, and a guest canceled at the last minute, and we had to, you know, again, there's the pressure of the clock. You've got to come up with something. And so we put Bill in a lab coat. I mean, he does have a science background. And it clicked. So, it was a really, really interesting, fun, amazing 15 years. I got to hang out with TV stars and rock stars and learn from all kinds of amazing people who had and still have amazing, incredible careers.
Yeah, that would be really exciting.
Yeah.
So, but are you going to share with us the name of your show, or is that a secret?
Oh, yeah, no, the show is called Almost Live. Almost Live. We were kind of a Seattle institution for 15 years. We were also syndicated a couple times. We were on Comedy Central for 2.5 years. And then we had one or two other syndication deals. So we were seen nationwide a few times, but primarily we were a local Seattle-based show.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and thrived for 15 years. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah, we did pretty well. And I attribute that to the fact that I had an amazing team. As you mentioned in your very kind introduction, yes, I won 29 Emmys. I was fortunate enough to win 29 Emmys for my work. Probably the more impressive number is that my team won over 100 Emmys of their own. I think pretty much everybody that worked for me and with me has won at least one Emmy, I think. So, pretty good show. I would put my people up against pretty much anybody.
Wow. And I have a copy of your book, The Executive Producer. And in that, you were relating being a producer to how we tie that into our business, our personal lives. Can you talk about that a bit?
Sure. Yeah. Basically, the premise for that book and the premise for much of my speaking career is it's about being a producer. Now, in my case, producer was the job title. I was the executive producer. I was a TV producer. That's what I did. But when you think about it, we're all producers. I mean, right now, you're producing this podcast. In other work, here's what it comes down to. We are the ones, we are the producers. The buck stops with us. We are the ones who are responsible for our results, for our outcomes. I remember the very first time I produced the show, it was my first show. And I got to be honest with you, Catherine, I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I really didn't. I'd never produced a show like this before. And you know what that's like. I mean, I think everybody listening can relate to that. You know, remember your first day on the new job and you just feel like everybody else is so competent and they're mm-hmm. so good and you don't have a clue what you're doing and you wonder how in the world you got there in the first place.
Right.
And you feel like a fraud. There's imposter syndrome. There's mm-hmm. all that thing. And that's what I felt like. Meanwhile, I had to produce this TV show. I had a staff, I had a crew, I had a studio, a live studio audience of 175 people, plus roughly a million people who would be watching the show in just a few hours. We taped the show just a couple hours before it aired. And one of my main guests, who happened to be the governor of the state of Washington, was a no-show. He was, you know, he was late. He eventually did show up, but you know, half hour before showtime, he wasn't there, and he was supposed to have been there an hour before. So I was panicking, had no idea what I was doing, because again, I hadn't had any experience to build on for this. And I remember I was just kind of pacing the halls, trying to think, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And I'm cursing the governor as I'm pacing. I'm walking back and forth throughout the hallways of King TV, talking about the stupid governor of the state. You know, just. And I turned a corner, and bam! I mean, I literally crashed headfirst into Jerry Seinfeld.
Oh no!
Which doesn't happen all that often, you know. Yeah, Jerry was the comedian that I'd hired to be the comedian for my first show. Which is not bad, because he happened to be the hottest comedian in the country at the time. Now, his TV show was not on the air yet, but he was, I mean, you ask any comedian who's the top comedian in the country in 1984, Jerry Seinfeld, that's it. So Jerry asked me, you know, he said, Bill, what's the deal? You know, because he could tell something was wrong, because one, I was cursing the governor, and two, probably sweating like a pig out of nerves. And I had to fess up. I said, look, here's what happened, and I don't know what to do. I said, so what's your advice? Because, you know, Jerry had been around the block once or twice. I had not. And that's when Jerry said three things to me that have stuck with me ever since. He said, he looked at me and said, hey, you're the producer. Dress rehearsal is over. It's showtime. Which was a real wake-up call. You know what I mean? I mean, so that's a wake-up call that some people never seem to get. You know people like that?
Absolutely. Just,
they don't seem to get that this is it. This is showtime. You know, we all know people who think, well, I'll work on my relationship later. I'll start saving for retirement later. I'll work on my career later. I'll take care of the lawn later. It's like, what? You think this is a dress rehearsal? No, this is it. This is now. You're the producer. You're the one who's responsible. That's what Jerry was saying to me. He said, look, this is your rodeo. This is your circus. These are your monkeys. You're the producer. What are you going to do? It's showtime. Dress rehearsal ended. It's showtime. And that's true for all of us, because we, like I said, we are all producers.
Absolutely. And when you're talking about us all being producers, what are some of the things that, some nuggets of wisdom that you can share with us in, well, how do we take that now? Okay, I'm a producer at Showtime. How do I now apply that to my business that I'm building?
Well, there are a few things. And again, Catherine, I didn't know all this as I was doing it. It's sometimes it's only in hindsight, it's only in retrospect that you can look back and say, oh, look, here's what I actually learned. Mm-hmm. You know, when you start to analyze it, it was actually when I started speaking about it that I had to think, okay, wait a minute, now what did I do to win 29 Emmys? How did I lead my team to over 100 Emmys? What were the actual things that I did? Because, you know, when you're in the middle of it, you're just doing it. You're just, you know, you're swimming as fast as you can. And you're not really looking at your technique. Wait, I'm putting this arm forward, and now I'm doing this. You know, but in hindsight, you can look back. And there are a couple of things that I realized that I did right. Not in the beginning, because in the beginning, I was still learning. I made lots and lots of mistakes. But here are some of the things that I got right eventually. First of all was that mindset that I got from Jerry Seinfeld. Now, it took me a little while to internalize it, but the mindset that, yeah, I'm the producer. I'm responsible. You know, I can't blame other people. I can, but it's not going to be effective. Like, oh, why didn't this sketch work? Well, because Bob messed up his line. Okay, still, I'm the guy who's in charge of the show. So if Bob messed up his line, did I not give him enough rehearsal time? Was it just a one-time flub? Do I need to say something to Bob? It's my responsibility. So part of it is that mindset of really getting to the mindset that I'm responsible for my results in both my professional and my personal life. You know, if my relationships are going down the toilet, okay, I can blame my significant other, but, you know, we all know that that doesn't really work. The thing is, okay, what can I take responsibility for to change the situation? Because I can only take responsibility for myself. And we all know that academically. We've read it. We've read it in blogs and on memes and that sort of thing. But have we really internalized it? So that was the one thing. And then as I was kind of looking at, okay, what is it that I really did as a producer? What does a producer really do? And I wanted to I wanted to kind of simplify it because I think we tend to overcomplicate a lot of things in life. Most things in life are actually simpler than we think they are. Sure, there are some complicated things, but most things are simpler. I think leadership is actually simpler than some people, you know, than a lot of people make it out to be. To me, it comes down to three things. Being a producer comes down to three things, three questions that a producer has to ask and answer. And the three questions are, and this is going to sound like showbiz stuff, but it applies, and I'll kind of walk you through it. It applies to everything as well. The three questions are these: what's the show, who's the cast, and where's the script? Those are three things a producer has to ask if he or she is going to be effective as a producer. So what do those mean? Well, what's the show means what's the outcome? What is it that you're trying to produce? Like if it's a TV show, okay, are you producing The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, or are you producing, you know, CSI? Are you producing the 6 o'clock news, or are you producing Keeping Up with the Kardashians? I mean, you have to know what it is you're trying to produce. What's the show that you're trying to produce? What's the outcome you're trying to achieve? And this can be for any individual project. Like for you, you're producing this podcast. What do you want the podcast to be like? Not just each individual podcast, but you know what do I, Catherine, want the flavor of this podcast to be? What do I want the tone to be? Do I want it to be casual? Do I want should there be music in the beginning? What am I trying to talk about? Am I talking about leadership? Am I talking about healthcare? Am I talking about, you know, these are all decisions that you've already made because you're a producer. But it's the same thing with everything in life. Let's say you want to buy a new car. Okay, that's a show. What's the outcome you want? What do you want it to look like? So what can you do to set yourself up for success? But if you just go in and just try and kind of, you know, fake your way through it or flounder your way through it, you're probably not going to get great results. And everybody on your team needs to know what the show is too. If you're a leader in a business or a profession, sometimes that doesn't happen where, you know, you as the leader may have what you think is a clear vision for where you want this project to go, or this, or your company to go, or whatever. You may think you have a clear vision, but have you tried asking your team members to see if they know what that vision is? Because a lot of times they don't. You think everybody is on board with what the show is. It's amazing how many times they think, oh, I thought we were doing this. Mm-hmm. Like you think you're producing, Grey's Anatomy. Meanwhile, they're out there producing The Bachelor, you know, so, and you're wondering why you're not getting great results because you're trying to produce different things because there's no clarity on what the show is. So the first thing a producer has to do is answer the question, what's the show? And then communicate that answer clearly to his or her team, to those who are responsible. And team brings us to the second question. What's the cast? Or I'm sorry, what's the show? Who is the cast? Who is the cast? Who is it who's going to help you? Because as you know as well as I do, that success is almost never a solo operation. You know, we need to rely on other people. We have this romantic idea of, you know, the Lone Ranger or the, like, you know, Batman acting on his own with nobody around. Well, Batman had Alfred and he had we need other people. So who are those people going to be? And a producer doesn't cast a show just by chance. You know, when Jerry Seinfeld started his own show, he didn't just go into Walmart and say, oh, let's have that guy be Kramer. No. You know, I mean, he wanted to get just the right person. But so many of us just kind of like, well, I'll just get this person because that's the cheapest, because they're inexpensive. Or I'll just get this person because they live close by. Or I'll just, you know, I mean, we tend to cast based on convenience or chance as opposed to, okay, who's the right person for this particular role, again, in either personal or professional life. You know, if you need your gutters cleaned, okay, do you just like ask a neighbor, hey, could you clean my gutter? Or do you go to like Angie's List or someplace like that, or Yelp reviews and try and find the right, you know, whatever it is in your life, are you getting the best people that you can given your resources and making sure that they're doing the right jobs? You're not going to get a great electrician and say, hey, could you clean my gutters as well? because that's not what he or she does. You know, so we have to kind of figure that out. So again, who's the cast and be conscious. Yeah.
I want to ask you, as far as who's the cast, in the executive producer, you actually mention 5 types of people that you should have in your cast. So I would like to go through each of those and have you describe each of those and what you mean by this. So the first one that you stated was a smart person who disagrees with you. Why should we have someone like that?
Oh, so important. Here's why we need that, because you and I both know people who have this mistaken idea that they need to be the smartest person in the room. You know people like that?
Oh, absolutely. Lots of them.
Right. And here's the problem. If you insist on being the smartest person in the room, that means that you think that nobody else has anything to teach you. Mm-hmm. And here's even the bigger problem. See, here's what I found out about smart people. Smart people like to be right. And in the absence of another smart person who disagrees, a smart person will defend the most god-awful ideas. Because they don't know. They think, well, I'm right. And we know people like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we read about them in the news. And we see them on television sometimes. Who just think, I'm the smartest person in the room. My ideas are the right ones. And that may not necessarily be true.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you need somebody else who's going to say, well, hang on, let's take a look at that. Somebody who will force you to defend your ideas or improve your ideas. You need that person who's going to be kind of this sounding board who can help you. You know, it's like if you write a book or an article and you make a typo, like you put the, you know, and you read it 100 times and you don't notice it because you're so close to it. And then you ask a friend to take a look at it and they go, well, you put the here twice. I said, no, I did. Oh my gosh, I did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because sometimes we don't see our own things, or somebody can say, you know, let's look at, so one of my passions is the Beatles. John Lennon and Paul McCartney, they were each other's smartest person in the room, smartest person in the room. You know, John would come in with a brilliant song, and Paul would say, oh, you know what? What if we did this? Wow. And that takes it up a level. And John would do the same for Paul. You know, Paul will come in with a song and John will say, oh, but, you know, what about this line instead? Ooh, better. Great. Fantastic. So, you know, and without that, that's why, you know, in Beatle talk, you know, everybody, the common wisdom, and it's pretty much true, is that neither John nor Paul are, or were in John's case, as good as a solo artist as they were as Beatles. Now they have their moments. I mean, John wrote Imagine and things like that. But by and large, they were better together because they could tell each other, you know what, you can do better than this. And sometimes it's just that. Somebody who will have the guts to tell you, you know what, this isn't your best work. You can do better. They don't even have to tell you how to do it better. But sometimes it's just somebody who will raise the bar for you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you surround yourself by yes men or yes women who just agree with everything you say, you're never going to grow. You're never going to learn. You're never going to get better. And here's the biggest problem with that. While you're not growing and not learning and not getting better, the competition is. So that's why you need a smart person who disagrees with you.
Mm, very good. I love it. And then the second person you said that we need to have is a butt kicker.
Yeah. Yeah, you need the butt kicker. And look, that may be you as the leader. You may be the butt kicker. But we all, you know, you've heard the phrase, you know, paralysis by analysis.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it's like, oh, we just need to have one more meeting. We just need to do one more study. We just need to read one more article. We just need to get one more online course on how to do something. We just need to, you know, at some point you've got to take action. The universe rewards action. So, yes, you need to do your due diligence. You need to do your research. But there's a time where, okay, now you got to start writing the book. Now you have to start doing the project. Now you've got to, you know, you can aim, but at some point you've got to fire the arrow. And sometimes you need somebody. I remember I used to have a business partner for a production company that I had. We made corporate training videos. And he drove me crazy. And the butt kicker will drive you crazy. Because he always, I still have nightmares about it. He would always say, we got to go. We got to get moving. I'm like, no, we haven't even done our homework yet. But see, if it were up to me, I would have just done homework forever and never pulled the trigger. Now, he erred on the other side of the equation. But without him, we probably would have never even made our first video. So, you know, you have to have that person who's going to light that fire under your butt and say, okay, now it's time to take some action. You need that person.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We definitely do, because we get too comfortable in our own ways. And it's easy to be, I know this to be true myself, it's easy to be the studier and the learner, and yep, I got this homework I got to get done, and I'll get to that eventually.
Well, it's like, you know, okay, so you do this podcast. My guess is you thought about doing a podcast long before you actually did it, because of course we do that. But at some point you probably said to yourself, okay, look, at some point you had to do your first interview. You had to do that first one.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And was it perfect? Maybe not. At some point I had to produce my first show. You know, even now with a podcast, you know, it's like, okay, do I have all the perfect equipment? Maybe so, maybe not. But you're doing it. It does, you know, that can all happen later. You know, but if we wait for something to be perfect, it's never going to happen. So we have to be willing to go out and then kind of learn on the way. And again, you need a butt. If you can't be your own butt kicker, you need to have that person in your world someplace.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Definitely. So the third person that you say we need is a veteran.
Yeah, the voice of experience. Because if you want to invent a wheel, it'd be nice to have somebody who could say to you, hey, you know what, Catherine, that wheel's already been invented. Oh, great. You just saved me, you know, hours, days, weeks, maybe even years of time by pointing that out. Or somebody who can say, you know what, I've actually been down this road. Now, here's what I learned. Here's something you might want to watch out for. This is your Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, or your Yoda. You know, this is your guide. Some people call it a mentor. Maybe it's a coach. Although a coach hasn't necessarily been where it is that you want to go, but a mentor has. So whatever, like, if, again, let's use the example of you want to go out and buy a new car. Well, if you haven't bought one for a long time, you may not know much about it. So let's ask somebody who does it a lot. Say, okay, what do I need to watch out for? What should I be doing? What should I be saying? Well, make sure you don't say this. Okay, great. That's good. You just saved me a lot of money. In business, whatever business you're in, it really helps if you can find somebody who's achieved success in that particular arena before. So so many of us are reluctant to ask for help. We don't want to admit that maybe we don't have all the answers or that we could use some guidance. But because we think we'll look stupid. The only thing that's going to make us look stupid is not asking for help when we need it. So, yeah, you need to have the veteran. You need to seek out somebody who's been there before. And this, by the way, this could be in the form of biographies. I'm reading Doris Kearns Goodwin's book about leadership now, where she talks about four presidents that she's written biographies on, Lincoln, both Roosevelt's, and LBJ. And so those can be veterans as well. I mean, Lincoln is a veteran. He's a guide. He's a mentor. It doesn't have to be somebody who you actually meet with and have coffee with once a week.
Mm-hmm.
You can find these people in virtually every podcast you've done, Catherine. There's wisdom on every podcast up to this one, unfortunately. But there's wisdom on all the other podcasts. Okay, those people are all mentors. They are veterans. And what they – I mean, look, you did an interview with John Chen. He's brilliant. So if somebody is in an arena and they want to achieve the kinds of things that John has achieved, he's right there. You've done an interview with him. Mm-hmm. He's told you how he got there. So, you know, it's mentors and veterans are all around us, but it's up to us to seek them out.
Yes, and I will disagree with you, Bill, that...
About John Chen?
No, he actually is
good at what he does.
He is, yes. I've spoken with him in person a couple of times, actually, and he does, and that is not the part I'm disagreeing with.
Oh, I see.
I am disagreeing with the fact that you said all of my podcasts are full of wisdom up until this one. Yes, it is true that all of my podcasts are full of wisdom, including this one.
Oh, that's very sweet of you.
So, going on to the next person that we need to have on our cast, you say is a guy who knows a guy.
Or a gal who knows a gal. These are the connectors. Malcolm Gladwell in his, The Tipping Point. He actually calls these people the connectors. These are the people. Do you know people like this who they seem to know everybody? Like in the old days, we would say they had a full Rolodex. You know, they know everybody. This is the person who, when you tell them, hey, here's the show I'm trying to produce, they come back and say, oh, you know what? I know exactly who you need to talk to, and they do, and they'll make a phone call and they set it up. And these people are the human shortcuts. Because again, they just know all these people. So especially if you're an introvert, it's good to know somebody like this, because these people tend to be extroverts, and introverts, we tend to, because I am one, we tend to have a small, very close circle of friends, but we don't know everybody. But there are certain, I've got at least two or three people in my life who they are so connected that anytime I need anything, I can just give them a call and say, hey, here's the magic question. Hey, who do you know who, and then whatever it is that you're looking for, whatever help, whatever advice it is that you're looking for, and 9 times out of 10, they'll say, Janice so-and-so in Kentucky, here, I've got her email address. I'll set you up. LinkedIn is kind of like the online business version of this, of a guy who knows a guy or a gal who knows a gal. You can see each other's first connections, second level connections, third level connections, that sort of thing. So that helps, but there's nothing quite like knowing a specific person that you can just pick up the phone or have lunch with and say, hey, by the way, who do you know who blank? And then they tell you, and man, you're off and running. They've just saved your bacon.
Mm-hmm. And you got to have that bacon.
Got to have the bacon. Right. Bacon's important.
All right. And then the fifth person that you said we need to have on our cast. I love this. I love this. This is so Bill. A wacky neighbor.
The wacky neighbor. Yeah, this is the Kramer on Seinfeld, or for the older people, it's the Norton on The Honeymooners. I should come up with more recent references, but I don't have them for whatever reason. But yeah, this is the person. This is the unconventional thinker. It's the person who's going to come up with the ideas that nobody else would come up with. And here's kind of the trick on this is that this person, there's a really good chance that this person is going to come from outside your industry. If we're talking to business people, in other words, if you're in a, aerotech, and you're looking for the wacky neighbor, you're probably looking for, you might be looking for somebody who's a poet or somebody who's a painter, or somebody who works on nuclear submarines or something, but something outside of your field. Because the wacky neighbor sees, and by definition, the wacky neighbor sees the world differently than we do. So, look, this is kind of the opposite of the veteran. So, like, if you're looking for ways to say, improve your podcast, one way is to find veterans who've been there before, and there are courses available. You can, get a hold of people like David Siteman Garland and people like that. And, so all of those veterans are out there, but they all look at the world through the podcasting lens. They all look at the world through the same filter. So they'll probably give you great advice. But if you want that breakthrough idea where people go like, oh my goodness, how did she come up with this? That's when it really helps to talk to somebody who sees the world through a different filter, who sees the world differently than we do. I told you that when we were, when I was producing my TV show, Almost Live, There was one night we had a guest booked. Johnny Depp was going to be our guest on our show because he was in 21 Jump Street at the time, and they were just up the street in Vancouver, BC. So I booked Johnny. We had a couple great conversations. He said, yeah, I'll be there. It'll be great. And then the day of the show, he called me, and he had to cancel. Through no fault of his own, he had to cancel. And now we're in a panic. You've probably been in that situation. I'm sure most of the people listening have been in that situation where all of a sudden your best laid plans all of a sudden fall apart at the last minute. And you're scrambling. Like, because again, you're the producer. What are you going to do? So I call this emergency meeting, and we tried to come up with a guest. We're trying to come up with a guest to interview. That's our filter. We're looking for a guest to interview because that's the slot we're trying to fill. And so we're trying to think of all these people, you know, who's local, because, you know, there's no time to fly anybody in. And so we're in Seattle. We think, well, you know, okay, well, how about one of those, how about a Seahawk, a Seattle Seahawk? No, they're out of town. Ugh. Okay, how about that cute new intern or cute new anchor at Como TV? No, she's in rehab. Oh, which she was at the time. We're looking and looking and trying to find a guest to interview, and we're not coming up with anybody. And all of a sudden, my lowest paid writer pops his head up and says, maybe I could do something with liquid nitrogen. We're like, what? Shut up. Because again, we had our blinders on. We were looking at the show through a particular filter. That filter was, we want a guest to interview. Mm-hmm. And this guy's talking about, well, give me some liquid nitrogen. It's like, shut up, Bill. That was his name, Bill. Bill Nye, my lowest paid writer. But then all of a sudden the pressure, you know, the clock kept ticking and we weren't coming up with anybody. So eventually it's like, all right, Bill, what's this stupid idea you have with liquid nitrogen? And like I say, Bill Nye, he has a science background. He went to Cornell. He's an engineer by trade. And he started painting this picture of what it could look like. And all of a sudden it's like, oh, you know what? This just might work. But so Bill Nye was our wacky neighbor at the time because, see, we were all writers and producers. We were all looking through that lens, through that filter. Bill Nye was and is a science guy. He looked at the world differently than we did. So he found a solution that we never would have come up with. I mean, we're all looking for a guest to interview. There's no way we would have come up with liquid nitrogen. Only the wacky neighbor could come up with that. And again, he saved the day and went on to influence an entire generation of students, many of whom are working in science now. There are people working at NASA who are working there because they watched Bill Nye, the science guy, growing up. And that only happened because, one, a guest canceled, which seemed like a bad thing, so there was a crisis. And then finally, it took me a while because I resisted it at first, I finally was forced to listen to the wacky neighbor, and that made all the difference.
Mm-hmm. So now tying all of this back together into what you said earlier, that you didn't realize you were learning all of these things, but you've learned all these things all along the way as you were working in the production field. And mm-hmm. And then now you've taken these things and you've created this beautiful analogy into how do we bring this into our personal lives? How do we bring this into our business lives? And now you are out there sharing this. You are out there go from TV producer to, what would you call yourself, leadership trainer?
Leadership keynote speaker.
Okay.
Basically, I open and close and or close a lot of conventions. I go to a lot of conventions every year because I'm working them. I try and in a very energetic, very entertaining hour or, you know, 40 minutes to an hour to 70 minutes, whatever. I try and share some of these things that I've learned because I have learned quite a bit along the way. And look, there's some pretty cool stories too. I mean, it's you know, my audiences, they know who Jerry Seinfeld is. They know who Ellen DeGeneres is. They know who Bill Nye the Science Guy is. But they don't know the stories that I know because they weren't in the room. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the cool songs from Hamilton is, you know, being in the room where it happened. Well, I was in the room where it happened. And so I can share some things that they won't have read in any book. They won't have heard anyplace else because, again, I was the only one in the room when it happened. When Bill Nye the Science Guy was invented, there were only like four of us in the room when it happened. So I can tell some of those stories. And then obviously the key is then to relate it to their world, which is where the research and the homework comes in. Because I can't just tell, look, here's something else I did on my TV show, and here's something else we did. At some point, I've got to say, okay, so how does this relate to you and your world specifically?
Mm-hmm.
Like, who's your wacky neighbor? Who's your veteran? What's the show that you're trying to produce? You know, where's your script, which is the third question that we talked about earlier. Where's your script? And the script is the game plan. The script tells you, here's what to do first, second, third. The script is when you map it out. Say, look, here's what I want to produce. Here's my show, and here's who I'm going to surround myself. Here's the cast. Here's the people who are going to help me produce this show. And now, how are we going to do it? That's the script. So I can ask my audiences, okay, so what's your script? What's your game plan? What's actually on your calendar that's going to tell you, here's what I'm going to do on Tuesday to move me closer to producing my show. Here's what I'm going to do tomorrow that's going to help me get closer to producing my show. I'm going to make these three phone calls, or I'm going to write this chapter of my book, or I'm going to research these things, or I'm going to, you know, if my goal is to lose weight, okay, I'm going to take a walk around the block. I'm going to do a jog. I'm going to, you know, whatever. Like, what are you doing specifically to help you get to that final show? And that's where the script comes in.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Thank you for bringing that back around. I almost forgot that third question.
I almost did too. It just came to me somehow. But yeah. These are some of the things that I want the people in my audience to start thinking about. Because again, look, we know all this stuff. When I say what's the show, who's the cast, where's the script, all I'm really saying is, what's the result you want to achieve? Who's going to help you achieve it? How are you going to do that? Well, that's not revolutionary. I'm not the first person who's ever said that.
Mm-hmm.
But I am the first person who's ever said it this way, with these particular stories that make it a little more entertaining, maybe a little more palatable. And my job is, look, you've heard this before, but maybe you haven't thought about it in quite this way. So maybe by hearing it this way, you'll actually start to take some action on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the goal. Because again, without action, nothing's going to happen.
Right. And in that way, the way that you present it, it becomes more relatable to most
of us. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So, wow. Well, as I said, this episode is definitely full of a lot of wisdom, and I wish we could just go on and on. You have so much to share. It has been a great pleasure having you on the show, Bill. Thank you so much for all of the information that you've shared. And if there was somebody that is listening, if they were interested in getting in touch with you to maybe they have they're looking for a keynote speaker, what would be the best way to connect with you?
Best way is to go to my website, which is billstainton.com, and I'll spell that because many people get it wrong. It's billstainton.com. A lot of people forget the I. billstainton.com. So they can go to my website and find out more about me. If they want to get in touch with me directly, my email is bill@billstainton.com. And yes, if anybody out there is looking for an energetic, entertaining, and relevant keynoter for their event, at least put me on the short list and let's have a conversation.
Excellent. Sounds great. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks so much, Catherine. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for tuning in to the Rockstar Achievers Podcast. If you are looking to reach new levels of success by plowing through your roadblocks, outsmarting your competition, growing a flourishing business, or reaching unparalleled levels of performance, go to www.acceleratedresults365.com or email Catherine@acceleratedresults365.com and learn how you can get started with Accelerated Results 365 today.